Bryce Cotton, just when we thought, you know, maybe he's starting to, maybe we're seeing perhaps the very best of Bryce Cotton. Well, we're seeing the very best of him right now. It's quite astounding. We should never question a champion, of course, but
yeah.
Did anyone expect him to have this in him at this point in his career?
Well, put it this way, I received a very funny but very on-the-point text from a friend of the show, a friend of mine, Dan Ewing, star of Screen Big and Small, of course, basically saying, well, there's 59 reasons why it's your fault, Matthew. And I get Matthew when I'm in trouble. So it was, and then, of course, he was serious. He said, look, this is just unbelievable. It's almost unprecedented, you know, the second most ever in a 40-minute game. Watching it was quite interesting because there wasn't really the sense in the first 5 minutes, kind of early in the beginning. And then he just went completely crazy in that first quarter, 13 straight points in a 3 minute span. And you thought, oh, here we go. Ends up with 20 in the first quarter, then 31 the first half. And he just kept going. His numbers were insane. He even managed to dish off for 7 assists, which is remarkable in of itself and kind of shows that he's always been by nature, even though he's a world-class scorer, by nature, he's also unselfish. And that's part of why he's so special as an offensive player. So it was mind-blowing, obviously. And, you know, second most in a 40-minute game behind the late Reg Biddings all those years ago. And who had 63 for Forestville versus Bankstown. That was 1981. Unfortunately, they didn't keep the stats for that game, Basketball Australia. So we've gotten, you look online, it's 25 of 50 because everyone shot 50% from 79 to 81 as far as BA is concerned. You remember years ago, we did that great historical podcast with Boddy Notch, and it's something that we talk about, you know, the early days of the NBL, and it's something that we talked about, you know, the lack of stats. Anyway, be that as it may, Bryce was extraordinary. Obviously, to get the franchise scoring record in a 40-minute game is insane, ahead of another legend in James Crawford, who had 57 in a 48-minute game. High score in the league since Shane Hill had 61 for Brisbane in 94. Just you go on and on and on about it. And as you mentioned, the three straight games goes 59, 40, 49. Should have had at least 50 against Adelaide. Again, and I know it's been spoken about online, but it's worth repeating. First to have at least 40 points in three straight games since the GOAT, Andrew Gaze in 91, and you know, only one of five players in NBL history to do that. And you know, when you look at the others, obviously Andrew Gaze, Al Green, Leroy Loggins, Wayne McDaniel. I mean, those guys are, you know, arguably the greatest you know, quintet of scorers, and now it's a quartet. And now a quintet of scorers with Bryce that the league has ever seen. You know, you look at any stats historically that you like, and in terms of who's up there in the top five, particularly from an offensive standpoint, and it's really it's all Andrew, Al, Leroy, and Wayne. And Bryce, you know, sort of joins the party. At least, you know, he didn't play as long as what those guys did in the league. And we'll get to, you know, something else about him that we're not sure about soon, but that'll affect the Wildcats potentially. But, I mean, yeah, there's nothing much you can say. Otherwise, he's just a great showman. He's one of, if not the greatest, from an import standpoint at least, he's the greatest offensive player, I think, ever. And I say that even, you know, with Leroy and Al Green and Wayne McDaniel, really good friend of mine, and you know, Wayne was an unbelievable scorer in his time at Newcastle and Geelong. So, but Bryce, I think, has probably surpassed them all. Now, am I saying that he's better than Leroy overall? No, I'm not. But he's clearly climbed into at least the top five of all time players in this league. It just an incredible display of marksmanship, of movement without the ball, of shooting with immense confidence, just finding different ways to score and giving it to you every which way you want, whether it's pulling up for a contested three or it's, you know, attacking in transition or the, you know, that sort of coming around those those curls that he runs and those, you know, those pin down screens and coming up shooting the mid range and just everything you can imagine. It's just an incredible effort by him. And, you know, and in this span, I mean, he's averaging 49.3 points per game. He's shooting, these numbers are just ludicrous. I mean, we talk about 50, 40, 90. This guy's shooting 65, 56, 94.7. From the 65.3 from the field, 56.3 from three, 94.7 from the free throw line in these three games. Just extraordinary. And, you know, there's not much you can say, but he, as I said, you know, when he hit that, and he's hitting half-court shots as well, and you just, I tweeted out, or whatever the hell it is nowadays, X'd out. Sometimes you just got to shake your head.
Is he back at the top of the MVP race after these three games?
100%. Yeah, he is. And he's probably the only guy that can have some time off as he did earlier on and then have, you know, what by his standards are struggles, which is what kind of brought up, you know, us talking about, you know, has Bryce not lost it, but as he, you know, and clearly he wasn't himself. He wasn't 100%. Now he is. You can see the movement is outstanding. He's always had the tank. He's like the Energizer Bunny. He just never, ever stops. And it makes him so, so difficult to defend. Even if you throw double teams at him, even if you blitz him, he figures it out because that's the other part of him that's one of his real superpowers, is out, just how damn smart he is. So, yeah, it's just he is number one. There's no doubt. He's the MVP favorite. This is another worldly type of run that he's on. And as you mentioned before, you never write off a champion, and haven't we learned that particular lesson very well? But even if he sort of drops down to a more mortal 30 a game the rest of the season, I think he's got it wrapped up already. Even though there's probably just under half of the competition left.
You mentioned a little bit earlier on about the length of time that he's been in the league, and that has been the question mark. That's been the talking point around Perth this year, because we know he's out of contract come the end of the season. If you're Mark Arena, you've just made this move to purchase the Wildcats from the SEG Group. You're now the man. You're now the guy tasked with steering this franchise into the future. You're a WA guy. You know the culture. You know this club. You know how this fan base thinks. And you see this. Now we're hearing reports that NBA clubs are sniffing around as well. What does Mark Arena do? Does he get out the checkbook and just say, write a number?
This is it. And I was meaning to actually Google Mark Arena net worth because he's clearly worth, you know, in the probably upwards of $200 million. But then when you're talking about something like this, there's so many factors you have to take into account. Look, it's a no-brainer that he should be made the highest-paid player in the league. We know Xavier Cooks is. We know that Bryce is, you know, more valuable than Xavier Cooks. And even though, you know, Xavier's been great for the Kings, won him a couple of championships, I think it's, you know, he's not been playing his best basketball this year. I mean, clearly it's especially of late. So clearly Bryce is the man. I guess you have to work out what it would mean to the Red Army to see him go, look, everybody's got, you know, an end date, as they say, whether it's retirement, whether it's moving on elsewhere, whether it's, you know, not being good enough to do what you do anymore. But having said that, he's not in his what you'd call athletic prime. He's in his 30s. But I guess they have to ask themselves the questions is, what does it mean to the Western Australian, the Red Army public? You know, how many would you lose if Bryce walked out the door, you know, at the end of the season? With the thought process being that, you know, when they moved to ROC Arena, that was before the Bryce Cotton era. That was the era of the Damian Martins and the Matthew Knights and the Jesse Wagstaff and his prime and Greg Heyer and a whole host of different guys, whether imports, great imports, whether they be James Ennis or Jermaine Beal or Kevin Lish or go on down the line. So, you know, this is the thing. And they were getting those crowds then that they're getting now. And they, you know, there were those couple of years where sort of the first year of John Riley and the first and last year of Scott Morrison, where the crowds started to fall because the Wildcat brand wasn't what, you know, it wasn't what it was. And they still have an issue with that identity, I believe. But then the other part of that is how many people nowadays are just saying, well, the hell, we're just going to go watch a show. And that show is named Bryce Cotton. So there's a lot to think about. You know, there's a lot. For me personally, I think you opened a checkbook. But then, you know, look, at the end of the day, it has to make financial sense for both parties, which is why I believe this will be his last year. And I think what we're seeing is kind of Bryce being the showman and wanting to put on one final real push to show people, you know, that he's one of the, he doesn't have to remind anybody and he's left an incredible legacy, but I think it's just more of the competitor in him, if that makes sense, that he feels like, okay, you know, I've got to really both show these people and also, you know, thank them for the, and I'm talking about the Red Army in particular, for the incredible love and support they've shown me over all these years. And, you know, yeah, he's done his more than his fair share in bringing championships to Western Australia. But I think this is part of why I believe he's, you know, it sounds, because I just think that there's just too much money elsewhere. You know, I mean, some of the, I don't buy the NBA thing. Look, he's been down that path before. You know, I think that might be the agents trying to stir something up in the media. I think the most likely scenario is what we've talked about, which is heading to Japan and playing for Trevor Gleeson. I think that's because the Japanese B League is absolutely awash with dollars. I've said before, Daniel Kim, who's a very good friend of mine, is an assistant coach in the Japanese B League. And as an assistant, even he's on very, very good coin. And some of the players over there are on million plus. So that's what you're looking at to keep him. And they have to look at it. I said this before, the unfortunate thing is being an import hurts in that regard. You know, they haven't been able to naturalize him. I think had they been able to do that, it would have been a different outcome. But again, without, it's pure speculation on my part, without any knowledge of the entire situation, I just think that what we're seeing is really a tremendous farewell to Perth and the NBL. Those three games were just, you know, unbelievable, out of this world.
So this is his swan song, and he is on this run. He's able to continue, not to the numbers that we are seeing at the moment, but as you mentioned, around the 30, 35 plus. How far can Perth ride this hot hand? Because you look at the defensive end of the floor, and they're giving up big numbers. I know that was a bit of a trend across the weekend with a few teams, but can Perth go deep just on this? And particularly at the moment, no Pinder, no Doolittle, as far as making a difference on the floor, how far can Perth go with Bryce Cotton in Super Saiyan mode, essentially?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Look, historically, the champions of the league would probably tell you no, for the most part. I mentioned this before, you know, Adelaide in the sort of 98, 99, when they went back to back under Phil Smythe, that incredible team, Brett Maher, you know, Daniel Moore, Kevin Brooks, etc. John Riley, ironically, was another one. But that they were still, you know, competent defensively. They weren't known for it. That wasn't their calling card. Okay, you know, like the obvious, you know, Brian Gorgian or even Andre Lomanis or, you know, Trevor Gleeson or, you know, sort of going back down the line. Of those, you know, even going back to the mid-80s in the Canberra mini dynasty under Bob Turner, that were just, you know, that those guys were incredible defensively. You know, Phil Smythe, Herb McEachin in the backcourt were a terror. And I've said they are one of the greatest backcourts ever. But particularly defensively, they were absolutely incredible. So it would buck the trend to go full tilt offense. But I just think looking at them the last four games, and you mentioned, you know, they're averaging 116.5 in a 40-minute era. Problem is they're giving up 106.7, but they're 3-1. Now, their one loss was to Illawarra at home. They, you know, handled Adelaide and undermanned Adelaide, obviously. Blew out New Zealand. But, I mean, to me, it almost seems like they've just said, to hell with it. We're just going to outscore teams because they are what they are defensively. I'm just not seeing any improvement at that end of the floor. And I talked about it before. They've never been able to establish an identity since Trevor Gleeson left of being a team that A, rebounds the ball, B, defends at a really high level and is physical. And part of that is also how they recruit. Now, they've recruited this team that is just blessed offensively, obviously led by, as I mentioned before, if not the greatest import from an offensive standpoint there's ever been, and there's been a bunch in this country, clearly one of the top three or four, right? You know, it just, you look at Doolittle, you look at Pinder, they can all score. Dylan Windler can score. Ty Webster can score. Ben Henschel's emerging, which is one of the great stories of the season, in my opinion, because I love to see these young guys step up. Elijah Pepper's a gunner. He can fill it up. Jesse Wagstaff, you leave him open, he's going to knock that thing down. So they've got all these guys. They don't have a recognized defensive stopper. For all of Bryce's greatness, look, he ain't a great defender. I know people say, well, he averaged so many steals a game. That's because he gambles and he's got great anticipation. But he's not a lockdown man defender. I mean, he just isn't. And I think, and I'm not knocking him at all. I mean, he carries such an enormous burden. You know, you want him to save his energy as much as possible for the offensive end of the floor because of what a difference maker, the ultimate nuclear deterrent, as I've called him. But they haven't had those guys in the last 3 years that are these absolute killer lockdown defenders. To kind of set the tone for them defensively, and they don't have it this year. So I'm kind of thinking that their attitude, and again, I'm, you know, just spitballing here, but it kind of looks to me like they're just, okay, let's just get out there and outscore teams, and they know they've got the firepower to do it. Can they carry that forward to the playoffs and then a championship, which is obviously Bryce's ultimate goal before he leaves? It's hard to say. It's going to be tough to do, but if Bryce turns into Superman again, who the hell knows?
It's the defense that concerns me more than anything else about the Perth Wildcats prospects, because it's all well and good to go out and outscore teams. It's entertaining to watch, but how sustainable is it if you're getting yourself into a series with the likes of Melbourne, likes of Illawarra, the likes of Sydney, and that's not even to say like an Adelaide even, because if you can believe this, the Perth Wildcats, as we sit here right now, they've played 17 games, so that's the equal most along with Melbourne of anyone else. They've given up the most points. 1636. The next nearest, surprisingly, is Melbourne, 1514. But this is a team that have given up 100 points 6 times this season, including their last 3 games, and they're ranked 10th in the league as far as defense for points against.
Yeah.
That's not a championship team, and certainly not a Perth Wildcats championship team, as we've come to know.
No, that's right, and it's what we talked about, isn't it? It's the establishment of a defensive identity just hasn't happened. It hasn't happened under Scott Morrison. It hasn't happened under John Riley. I just think this year, if you know, there might be a wink and a nod that, you know, Bryce is going internally. Again, I have no knowledge of this. I'm just speculating, but it may be that, look, what's the old saying? A leopard can't change its spots. Well, I just think it's the same for the Wildcats. They're not going to magically turn into this team that's going to start shutting down people, because they're not built that way. You know, and that's been a conscious decision from Danny Mills, you know, the GM of basketball, clearly, because of what's been built is an offensive, a team that, you know, makes its money at the offensive end of the floor. And we know historically, you know, championship level teams have got to be at least adequate defensively to get the rings. So yeah, it is going to be a giant question mark, because as I said, Julian, I don't see them changing. I really don't. I think this is what they are as a group. I think they've got to embrace it and just go with it and see how far it takes them.